Thanks for listening to the Suzy Larson Life podcast, available thanks to support from listeners like you. It's only just a matter of welcome to Suzy Larson Live. Always so honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, if you listen often enough, you know we've got a few guests, just a few, that we bring on every single month. We love to have them back time and time again. Today's guest is fast becoming one of our favorites. Jamie Winship joins me today, but this time he joins me alongside his beautiful wife, and I had the privilege of meeting her recently, and I would say she's as brilliant as Jamie is. And when I was thinking and prepping for the show today, I was thinking, when I think of Jamie, I think of fire. Like, his words burn up the lies and the excuses and everything that keeps us from all that God intends for us. When I think of Donna, even in the short time I got to spend with her, I see a flowing river. It's like life just spills out of her and flows through her. So you are in for a treat today. Today we're going to talk about how a scarcity mindset keeps us from the best of what God has for us. And you know what? A scarcity mindset in our mind keeps others from the best of what He has for them, because our story is just never about our story. We'll also draw from Jamie's amazing book, Living Fearless, Exchanging the Lives of the World for the Liberating Truth of God. Got a handful of copies to give away today. It's a great book. You can text the word book if you want in on the drawing, 877-933-2484. Now, I asked this question last time Jamie was on, but we've got, you know, hundreds of thousands of listeners, so not everybody texted in. So I want you to text in if you would. Tell me what you're afraid of. Tell me what you're afraid of, and I'll consider every text anonymous today. Text me. Tell me what you're afraid of. Tell me what you think most keeps you from dreaming with God, from being generous with others. What are you afraid of? Text me, 877-933-2484. Let me tell you about my guests. We'll get them on the show. Jamie has decades of experience of bringing peaceful solutions to some of the world's highest conflict areas, starting with a distinguished career in law enforcement. His unconventional efforts to bring about societal and racial reconciliation led him to Indonesia, Jordan, Iraq, Palestine, Israel, back to the U.S. He's worked with leaders in a variety of sectors, from police departments to pro football teams to faith-based organizations. He's the author of Living Fearless. That's a book we're highlighting today. Subtitle, Exchanging the Lives of the World for the Liberating Truth of God. Donna Winship left the American Dream with Jamie and their three boys, spent 25 years raising their family in the Middle East. This was a journey that would forever change their worldview. She's the author of Becoming What You Believe. It's an in-depth course on personal transformation at the identity level. Jamie and Donna have worked with leaders in professional sport, business, education, law enforcement, government, and nonprofits and other sectors. They're co-founders of Identity Exchange, providing training and consulting in the transformative power of living fearlessly in their true identity. The one time I'll ask you to talk at the same time, Jamie and Donna, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yay.
I've been so looking forward to this day ever since I met you, Donna. And Jamie, you're awesome. But I'm just saying, I was so excited to get you two together. And Jamie knows this, Donna, because he's been on so many times. But the first question of the day is always the same. And I love this question. It's just, what's the Lord been talking about these days?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I sure want to just start by saying thank you for having me on as well. And I loved meeting you also. But the Lord has really been speaking to me lately about His goodness, the goodness of God, because two things. We're living in really troubled times, as your listeners may have just found out. We lived in the Middle East for a long time, and so the events that are taking place now in Israel and Gaza are just heart-wrenching for us. It's very personal for us, for all the people there, and we deliberately try not to choose sides, because we have to see these people as human. And how can we apprehend God's goodness in the middle of such atrocities, right? The other reason it's so personal for me, this issue of God's goodness that I'm speaking to Him about, or He's speaking to me about, is one of my absolute closest friends, so important to me, just suddenly became ill, a life-threatening illness, has been in the hospital, And, you know, honestly, to be real, it's been devastating. And just listening to God and how it promises to be with us in suffering. He never promises that we won't suffer, but he promises to be with us in the suffering. So how can we tangibly experience him in times that are really troubling?
Wow, Donna, thank you for that. That's a beautiful invitation, truly, because he's always good, not just good when life's going the way we want. So good.
Yes.
Jamie, how about you?
Yeah, well, of course, I'm involved in all that as well, closely involved. However, I've been praying a lot and thinking a lot about, actually, probably one of the things you're going to talk about, and I hope we get to, is just separation worldview, just the whole power of our worldview and how much it affects our thinking. Yesterday, I taught two classes at a university here, one on constitutional law and one on marketplace ethics. And I talked about, in one class, about conflict resolution and in the other one about worldview. And it was amazing to me, as I'm with these young students, how little they think about those things and how they're just trying to figure out career and life and family and that sort of thing. And they're not paying attention to what is so dramatically influencing their lives. And so that's troubling to me on the one hand. But on the other hand, what I'm excited about is when they hear it, when you explain it to them. And we had a group of 20 to 30 year olds in our house Sunday night, a group of like 25 of them, that group. And same thing, just working through with them worldview. What's your view of God? What's your view of yourself? What's your view of others? How do you formulate that view? So all that's probably on my mind most of the time, and even how it affects me in my own walk. So that's a big prayer of mine, is that the Lord would help me be aware of these things.
You know, I feel like you both are in so many ways forerunners, that the Lord had you in the Middle East when he did, and then he brings you back. And you had such, God, you know, transformed your worldview in a way and at a time when, and you have stories to tell that help the rest of us. Really, I feel like confronts such our small-minded thinking. And you know this because you were at our friend's house, but we have a life group of, you know, a lawyer and the rest are doctors, and Kevin and I, they're smart people. And we're walking through your identity exchange material. And God is confronting us. It's like you don't even realize how many layers of self-preservation you have in place until one by
That's
one
right.
the Lord lovingly addresses them. And you recently, when you were in town, gave a message on a scarcity mindset, Jamie, and you talked about how as a police officer all those years ago, you were trained to know this part of town has this kind of gang, this part of town has this kind of gang. And when you know, encounter this situation, your training tells you to respond in this way. So tell us that story, if you remember the one where I think a gang member was high on something and he was in the courtyard of another gang's neighborhood. Tell the story, if you don't mind.
Well, I'll abbreviate it. That was that's true. Like even in, you know, when we think about separation worldview, just how much of our world is fragmented and intentionally and separated. And so in the area where I worked, in the district I worked in, there was a low income housing project, large, but the main street went down the middle of it. And on one side was one gang ran the whole place. And on the other side of the street, another gang ran that side. And so when you get a call, a dispatcher dispatches you to that area, you just wait to hear which side of the street you're going to. And then you know, okay, that gang runs that side of the street, and this is what kind of people are in that gang. And your brain shifts almost into a formula of how you're trained to work in those scenarios. And so it's not a lot of generative thinking, honestly. It's just go and react to the situation, do what you're supposed to do. And so I was dispatched to this midnight, you know, 2 a.m, something like that, by myself. It was a super busy night, so no backup available. And so I was sent into this apartment complex, and the complaint was there's a guy, you know, high on some sort of drug, standing in the courtyard of the apartment screaming that he's Superman. And so I go down there, you know, walk through the apartments into the courtyard, and there's, sure enough, there's a guy there. And he's standing there with his arms out, and he's screaming that he's Superman and that no one can hurt him. And so as I'm get closer to him, but not too close, but I can smell the ether, which is from the drug PCP, clearly coming off of him. And in our department, that is a use of lethal force offense. Once you smell that drug, because so many officers have been injured or killed trying to arrest someone on PCP because they can't feel anything. They're incredibly strong. They can't feel any pain. So it's very difficult to restrain them. So, so I drew my weapon, and, you know, as you're trained to aim center mass to stop aggressive action, your brain just goes right into the training. So I'm in the position, you know, to shoot. And at the same time, though, in my mind is this a prayer that's also part of my life and training. It is like, God, what do you want me to know? What do you want me to do here? Because this is not my preference to do this. And this woman comes running out of a ground floor apartment, and she gets between me and the guy, and she gets on her knees, and she starts praying. She's facing me. And she starts praying to Jesus that I won't, that God will prevent me from shooting this person who turns out to be her husband. Mm. And so she's pleading with God. And so again, it's a challenge, because if I walk away from this situation, I'm leaving a guy that's unknown. He's intoxicated. He's dangerous. Am I going to leave this woman with him? And she gets hurt. Everything that's wrong about the danger of walking away. And yet, I ask God what he wants me to know, what he wants me to do. And this woman is now kneeling in front of me. So, this is where you just have to trust God, and faith is the substance of the things you hope for, and see evidence of things you can't see yet. And it's risky. And so I said, can you get him inside? And she said, I can. And I said, can you keep him in there? Because, you know, if I have to come back, and it's just going to get worse. And she promises me that she can. And so she does. She gets him inside and closes the door. And I leave, and I just pray the rest of the shift, Lord, please keep that guy. Keep him calm. Keep him inside. Don't let him hurt her. And I don't hear anything. That's it. It goes, seems to be fine. I don't hear anything for, you know, weeks. And then I get dispatched down in the same subdivision in day work on the other side, where there's another gang that's much more violent than the one, and had a lot of run-ins with them. And on that side of the street is a basketball, fenced-in basketball court kind of up on a hill. And inside the basketball court, the dispatcher says, is a guy that walked away from a mental hospital, and he needs to be brought back. So I go down there, and I park in the parking lot, and I'm looking around. I don't see any gang guys around, which is good. And so I walk up, because I go in the fence, and it's closed in. There's only one way in and out, which is not a good situation. And so I go in there, and he's in there, and he's yelling, and I'm talking to him like, come on, we got to go. I'm not going to hurt you. I'm not arresting you. I just need you to come with me. And he says, I'm not coming, you know, and he clearly doesn't know where he is exactly. And so he puts his fingers through the chain link fence, and I'm pulling on him to try and get him loose, and he's really got a good hold on it. And I'm pulling on him, and while I'm pulling on him up in onto the basketball court comes the other whole gang. There's six guys, their lead guys. We've had many run-ins with him, and he's quite hostile towards police and all. And so I'm in a difficult situation, and the gang guy knows it. Cause I'm wrestling with this guy. I can't, there's no way out. I'm by myself, and I'm pulling on this guy who I don't want to leave, cause I don't know what he'll do. And so I'm actually talking in the guy's ear, the patient, and I'm saying, you better look out right now, because I have to get out of here, and we have to get out of here. And so I yank on him as hard as I can, and he just lets go at a fence. So both of us go flying, and I land on my back, and he lands on top of me. And when he does, because I had unsnapped my gun when the guys were coming on the court, in case I had to use it, my gun just goes flying out of my holster, slides out of my holster, and slides across the blacktop to the gang guy.
Oh,
it was like unbelievable. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Like, how is this possible? I've never seen this happen in a movie. You know, this never happens. And so the guy's on top of me. He's struggling. I'm holding on to him. And the gang guy picks up my gun. And he walks over to me, holding it above my face, above my head. And I know what he's thinking is he could shoot me, just hand the gun to the mental patient. And then that's going to be, you know, it's going to be the mental patient that gets blamed for this shooting that my gun came loose, et cetera. So I don't know. It's like, I have no idea what to do. And so again, it's the same prayer. It's like, God, just like, give me wisdom on what to do right now, right here. But I was thinking, it's funny having Donna here with me right now, because I was like, we'd been married like 4 years at that time. And I'm like, and wow, it was a great short life with her and our two kids at the time. And I was really thought this is going
to, yeah. We got to pause here. We got to go to break, and I can't even stand it. So hold that thought and that picture. Right. And Donna, I have 1,000 questions for you. Oh, my goodness.
I'm ready.
Oh, my goodness. Donna and Jamie Winship are my guests today. We're talking about scarcity mindset, and these stories are so important as a backdrop of where they're coming from, because you'll be amazed if you're willing, humble, and teachable to look at where you live in the false identity, where you have embraced beliefs that you don't have enough, that God is not enough, there'll never be enough. You'll be amazed at how directly connected those mindsets are to self-preservation, to dividing and conquering, to competing, to comparing and despairing, all the things that are the opposite of the kingdom. And so there's a way to enter in the fullness of what God has. This is a super important conversation. Don't go away. More with Jamie and Donna Winship in a minute. If you're a new listener, we want to officially welcome you with a free welcome pack gift. Request yours today at myfaithradio.com. Hope you're having a really great day. Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live. Have as my guests, really precious people. Jamie Winship, who you know, joins us about every month to talk identity. Well, today we've got the special treat of hearing from his wife, Donna, as well. And today was one of those days I wish the show was 2 hours, because there's so many questions. But before the break, Jamie, you were talking about back in your law enforcement days when you worked as an officer, you were called into gang territory and a man had escaped from a mental institution and was kind of roaming free in a tennis court. You went to get him and he was refusing to leave. And as you're trying to unclip his finger, you know, kung fu grip to the fence, a whole gang, a group of gang members come in behind you. So you're like, we have got to go. So you pull on him as he lets go. You guys fall down. Your gun slides across the ground into the hands of the lead gang member. So take the story from there.
Yeah. It's a weird scenario because there's a lot of officers who are actually shot with their own weapon because of fights and things like that. And so you're in this surreal situation, looking at your own gun pointing at you and just asking God what he wants me to know, what he wants me to do in this scenario. Mm-hmm. And so I'm laying there in this position, and then the gate on the basketball court swings open, and I look over, and it's the guy from the other gang from the other side of the street who I, you know, didn't shoot.
Right? Wow.
He comes walking on with his gang, and they come onto the basketball court, and they get in between, they get in a circle around me and the mental patient, and so that the other gang can't get near us, gain access to us. And he's just standing over me, looking at me, and nobody's talking. It was really interesting. It was very tense. Nobody's talking. And I look up in the guy's face, and I said, look, I they've got my gun. I need my gun. And he just snapped his fingers. It was hilarious. He snaps his fingers and my gun comes sliding back to me. And so then I holster my weapon and I get the guy up on his feet, and this gang is really in a one tight circle around me. And the other gang is in a circle around them. It's like a kind of dance. And I say to the guy that I had had the interaction with before, I said, I've got to get to my car. I got to get this guy in my car. And so we just moved in those circles. It was like they were a protective ring around me all the way down the hill to my car. I get the guy in the car. I get in the car and I roll my window down. And the guy from the other gang who I did and who was on the PCP, he's standing at my window. And I say to him, I really appreciate it. You saved my life. And he just smiled at me and he said, I am Superman. And
wow.
I drove away. And since after that, I went back and I met him and his wife who came out and prayed in front of me and started, you know, I had dinner with them when I was working midnight shifts. They became good friends.
Oh my goodness.
And they started working with the property management team to really bring order and peace to the whole area, to the whole apartment complex. It was really a beautiful time and how much crime dropped in that area because of that guy. So the guy that I thought
and
was
because
be
you
my
did
enemy,
what God wanted you to do,
right,
and you learned
right.
what God wanted you to know.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Donna, when I think of you moving to the Middle East, and I remember one of the times Jamie was on, he talked about how scary it was to send his boys to school because it was a 45-minute drive, if I remember right, through war-torn areas where you really didn't know from day to day if they get there safely or get back safely. So I'm trying to think of you dealing with the scarcity mindset. Like, how did God deal with your fears? How did he deal with all of the stuff that comes so instinctively to us as moms, and especially in a situation like that?
Yeah, you know, Susie, when I look back on that time, I don't know how we did it, honestly. And I have this little theory, and I call it grace for the place. Mm-hmm. And in the moment, it's like manna. We have God's abundant and generous grace for the present moment. But we don't have it when we think about all the what ifs for the future
wow.
or regrets from the past. But we do have it in this present moment. And, you know, when we moved to Baghdad, there was a certain kind of fear, of any kind of fear when you're going to a new place, not an unhealthy fear. But when we got there, it was really that grace for the place concept. And strangely enough, as protective as I was over our boys, Jamie really struggled with that fear. And that fear led him to have a huge experience with the Lord, a repentance experience where God reinterpreted that fear for him and made it something beautiful. It's his story he can talk about. But I never struggled with the fear like he did. And when I look back now, I really don't know how except to say I had grace for the place. Not that Jamie didn't. It's just we were wired, you know, we were just wired differently.
That's so unusual, though. Usually it would be the wife. I'm just saying it normally would be.
Oh, no. And it usually is. Believe me. But in that situation, it was just a supernatural, really, I will keep the imperfect peace whose mind is fixed on me because they trust me. You know, Isaiah 26:3. And it was a special grace because otherwise, how could I have lived there? It was one of the greatest. We lived there. That was in Iraq for about 15 months. And it was some of the greatest. It was some of the greatest 15 months of our whole career.
Wow. Jamie, it was several months ago you shared that story, but if you don't mind, we got about 5 minutes to break, 4 minutes to break or so. Would you mind, for those who maybe missed that conversation, because, you know, you're not any kind of scaredy cat. You're constantly in situations where your life was in danger, your family's life might be in danger. So this was something that the enemy was so threatened by. Your presence there, that he was, you know, poking at the most tender part for you with your boys. Talk about how God spoke to you about that fear.
Yeah. And another one of my fears is being on a show with my wife, because she tells the truth and tells who was really afraid in a situation. So that's why.
And look at all the grace you have. Isn't it amazing?
Grace to the place right now.
Oh, that's funny.
Moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for doing that, Donna. I appreciate that. You really. You're keeping
later.
Me humble. Thank you. Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll talk later.
It's my job.
Yeah, no,
it's
but it is true. It is beautiful when your partner, when the one God's, you know, paired you up with for life is in the moments when you're struggling, she's strong. Hmm. And vice versa. And I really love that. And we talk to couples all the time about that. It's not just this macho guy thing. It requires, there's many great fearless women in scripture, especially when men won't step up to the plate. So I'm not embarrassed to say that. But in that situation, yeah, it was really troubling me, mainly because I was entertaining this fear that if our kids got killed, and this is how self-preservation works, is how it would make me look to Donna's parents, for one thing, for dragging their only grandkids to a place that her dad was furious that we were going to Iraq. And so it was like, I was thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to explain to her father, and he's never going to believe in God because I ruined it, because I took these kids into an unhealthy situation. And that whole scenario is working through my mind, and it was making me dislike Iraqi people, which is another way that fear works. And so actually my team noticed it first. They're like, you're not talking to our Iraqi counterparts. Why? And it was because I was afraid of them. You can't love what you fear. Mm. Very difficult to love a people that you're afraid of. And that's a big deal and something we have to think about. And so I was just wrestling with it, but you can't just will yourself out of fear. Fear is lie based. And the lie that I was believing was that in some way God was either unable or unwilling to protect my kids in that particular scenario. And that was my fear. That means it was on me and I couldn't do it. And so it was just kind of debilitating. So that night I actually got Donna up hilariously, and she was frustrated because I woke her up and I'm like, something's wrong. Something's really wrong. And she walked with me around the house, and we prayed in every room and over our kids who were asleep. And then she said, I feel peace. I'm going back to bed. I was like, all right, you're just going to leave me alone in this. Okay, that's good. And so I went up on the roof of our house in central Baghdad, and big flat roofs where a lot of Iraqis slept out at night because it was so hot. And I was up there and I was looking, and we lived in between a big Sunni mosque and a big Shia mosque. And then I could see the cross swords of Saddam statue in front of me. It was like I was in the midst of my worst evil. And I just said to God, I yelled out loud, you know, I'm going to confess. I'm going to truth tell. I believe you're either unable or unwilling to help and protect my kids, and that they're going to get killed and it's going to be an embarrassment. And I said, what do you say? What do you do about that? What do you say about that? And after I yelled that out, I looked over to my left, and on the left side of me, on the corner of the roof, this big flat roof, I saw a soldier standing there, bigger than me, a soldier dressed in like U.S. desert fatigues. And I was, it was just like caught me off guard. And I thought, wow, we're nowhere near the military. We never operate near the military. And I just thought, that's really strange. And I looked to my right, and there was another soldier on the right side of the corner of our house, right corner of our house, and two behind me. I just turned in a circle, and they were all around me, these four sentries, and they all had their backs to me. They were all looking out like in the direction, you know, of a compass. And I knew this was God saying to me, this is the reality. You're not, what you see is not what's real. Mm. I'm going to give you a glimpse of what is real so that you'll stop being afraid that I'm not with you and I can't protect you because you're in this war zone. And so I knew it was some kind of angelic thing. And so I didn't know what to do. And I just kind of walked towards each century, I guess. And I just said, thank you for serving the Most High God. And then I just went and got in bed, and that was it. I was, you know, the fear was gone. The truth sets us, experiential truth sets us free. And the next day I asked my 17-year-old son if he was afraid. Are you afraid, you know, commuting to school back and forth? And he said, are you afraid? And I said, no, I'm not. Thank goodness. It was the day after that. And he said, if you're not afraid, why would I be afraid?
Wow.
And so that's just an encouragement to parents. Kids learn fear from us.
Wow, isn't that
so
true?
Don't teach your kids to be afraid.
Come on. And that there was an invitation for you. Go ahead, Donna.
I was just saying, next time your husband wakes you up in the middle of the night to pray, don't go back to bed, because I missed the angel experience.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly right.
I love it. I got peace. I'm going to bed. That's awesome. All right. All right. You say this in your book, as we go to break, when God starts to talk to you, you will know how to act. You'll know what to do uniquely with your life. You'll start doing things gradually, testing what you sense from God. Resist the fear and the doubt, and you will look back in a month, a year, and say, this life is amazing. Talking to Jamie and Donna Winship. When we come back, we're going to break down a false identity based on scarcity, that there's not enough to go around, a true identity based on abundance. And we'll break that down so we can take kind of a fearless moral inventory of our own lives. And we'll hear some more stories from the Winships. If you've got questions, text them in. If you want in on the drawing for Jamie's book, Living Fearless, text the word book to 877-933-2484. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks so much for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live, having a really great conversation with our friends Jamie and Donna Winship. Jamie wrote the book, Living Fearless, Exchanging the Lies of the World for the Liberating Truth of God. And you guys do this amazing identity exchange. Well, that's the name of your ministry, but there's a curriculum. Our group is going through it, and I highly, highly recommend it. I want to talk, if we can, about false identity and true identity as it relates to these four subpoints. So you can do it either way, you guys, if you guys each want to address them or take turns, but you just say, we're on live radio. It all is good. But in false identity, the top indicator is scarcity, that there's not enough to go around. Donna, I'll start with you. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's understanding that a false identity comes from beliefs formed in childhood. And you have a negative experience, or, you know, even to the point of a traumatic experience. And you form a belief system around that, and then that becomes the lens through which you see the world, which is what a worldview is. And so that separation worldview, the number one indicator is scarcity. And you can think of scarcity as just simply being not enough. And so how many of us, even right now, to all the listeners out there, how many times in a day do you feel like there's not enough? There's not enough time. There's not enough resources. There's not enough depth in your relationships. Is God even enough when we're in difficult circumstances? Some, you know, we hate to admit that, but sometimes we feel that way. And then what it all boils down to is realizing, hey, wait a minute, am I enough? You know, we feel like, I'm not good enough. I'm not a good enough mom. I'm not a good enough worker. And it boils down to that. That's a scarcity mindset. And that's the formation of the false identity. And a lot of us are just not even aware of it. Once we become aware of it, then we can take action. So that's really one of the first steps. And that's also in Jamie's book, Living Fearless, is awareness. That's one of the very first sections. And so it's becoming aware of just where did we learn to think this way? Because if we learned it at 4 years old, 5 years old, 10 years old, if we learned it, certainly we can unlearn it. And that's Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Stop being conformed to the pattern of your world, not necessarily the big bad world out there, but stop being conformed to the patterns of how you cope with your negative emotions and your feelings of not enoughness, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And then you will know what is good and perfect and pleasing.
Yeah. And, so when you're not
Jamie's
transformed,
story. Sorry.
I was going to say, when you're not transformed, then you can't discern what's good and pleasing, right? You're seeing the opposite.
That's right. And that mind renewal comes through experience. It doesn't come from information. Information just adds knowledge to your brain. What changes us is experience. Jamie just told the story about the encounter with the angels and his struggle to overcome fear. You know, he didn't just read a bunch of Bible verses and his fear went away. Of course, there is a place for that. We need to know the Word of God, absolutely. But there's that component of experiencing Jesus in our fear, letting Him transform us. Similar, again, I'll use Jamie's example because he just told it. And that's what gives us the change of thinking. So then we can discern the good, pleasing, perfect will of God. But that's just a little bit. The false identity is totally wrapped up in that not enough concept of a scarcity mindset.
Which keeps you constantly self-preserving. And I'm looking at time. I think I'm going to have to go through these. We'll just go back and forth here. So certainty, Jamie, that I actually felt relief when I saw this in your notes, that in the false identity is this need for certainty, that the world must be safe and predictable. Mm-hmm. And how many people, you know, even very wealthy people, are going to great lengths trying to assure and grab a hold of some kind of certainty. So talk about how that literally is linked to the false identity.
Right. Well, yeah. So in the false self, as Donna said, so you're not enough. There's not enough resources. There's not enough opportunity. I was asking these college kids yesterday, what's the biggest fear that you deal with? And Susie, I love how you do that with your listeners. That is the question to constantly be asking, because it does lead us into truth telling. But I was asking them, I was going over worldview with these students, and I was saying, what is your biggest fear in your life right now? Where do you feel time is your God? Time is running your life. And they all said, we've got to figure out our future. And so it's interesting. And I said, how much time do you have to figure out your future? And they said, not enough, because we might miss opportunities that come our way because we're not paying attention or we don't know what they are. And so then I said, so you're searching for certainty. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for a career path, a life partner, whatever, and you have to be certain because you only have one opportunity. These are 23-year-olds. You only have one opportunity in life. That's what they already believe, and so they're searching for certainty. The danger of certainty, besides the fact that nothing in the reality that we live in is certain, nothing is certain, is that certainty leads to a form of extremism. So I have to be certain about what I believe, that it's absolutely true, that it's always going to work. And anyone that challenges that certainty is a enemy to me, which means that I can't receive any new information about things. Once I've determined this is the way to protect myself and my future and protect opportunity for me and my family or whatever, anyone that challenges it is an enemy to me. And this is, again, just adds to the separation that happens. And the more certain we are, you know, in my view of God, in my view of politics, in my view of religion, the more it fractures us and causes conflict, actually. So scarcity leads to certainty, and certainty is a very dangerous. The Pharisees were certain. They were always certain.
It's an idol, isn't
it?
That's
exactly right. Yes. It's absolutely right.
You know, and our listeners know full well the health challenge that I've had over a lot of years with Lyme disease, and I've come so far, but I know God's a healer. I mean, I know He is. My own son was miraculously medically healed. Doctors have said medical miracle from a serious back injury. That hasn't gone that way for me. But I have stood in that messy middle to say He's the same God. He's the same God yesterday, today, and forever. But if you're sitting here telling me A plus B always equals C, so if a godly person gets sick and dies, it's because they missed a step. I don't believe that. And so people get so upset because some want to say, no, He really never does, because then I don't ever have to hope that He would.
Right.
Others say He always does. And they get mad at the thought that godly people would get sick and die because there's no certainty in that.
That's right.
Even that within the body of Christ causes, I'm amazed as I've stepped into that space, because I feel that's part of my calling is to help people heal, how upset people get that I would dare to even talk about it. I mean, so that's wow. Okay, another indicator of the false identity, and I think someone's going to really resonate with this, is perfection. Donna, that failure is not an option. So if you're in this place that if there's fear around if I fail, you are operating in the false identity. So say more about that.
Yes, you know, we just look at failure wrong, and just because I fail a math test, you know, if I'm a student, or I fail at work and, you know, the boss is disappointed in me, that doesn't mean you are a failure. We take an event that happens and we turn it into an identity. And It's just wrong. It's just a lie. All failure is an opportunity for growth and learning. And you think of any great invention, any Ben Franklin, Thomas Edison, Marie Curie, how many times did they fail before they invented the great thing that they invented? What if the first time they had taken, oh, I'm just a failure, I'm a loser? And so this search for perfection, just like certainty, it's just nothing. Nothing is perfect, right? And when we feel like it has to be perfect, there's no opportunity for growth. And that's a sure sign of the false identity. Like Jamie said a second ago, you can't receive new information because you're blocked.
So we're going to go to break, and I want to make sure with the remaining time we have left, we can get into the true identity, because people are like, tell me more. I want to hear this on the true identity. The fourth point is the self-interest, that it's all about me. And then one of the ways you know you're operating in the self-identity is if you're obsessed with yourself, you're obsessed with comparison and despair and perfection and all of those things. Ask the Lord, show me my faulty platform. How do I step onto and into my true identity? So when we come back, we're going to dig in to the true identity, which is founded on abundance, because we serve the God of abundance. Donna and Jamie Winship are my guests today. Isn't this good stuff? And guess what? They're both coming back again next month. So excited about that. Jamie's book, Living Fearless, Exchanging the Lies of the World for the Liberating Truth of God. We'll be back in a minute. If you listen to me often enough, you know I believe in the power of prayer. The Bible says the prayer of the righteous accomplishes great and powerful things. I am passionate about prayer, and we all need it. And we would love to pray for you. The Faith Radio team, we're serious about prayer, and we pray for specific listener requests every single week. So if you have a request, if you're walking through a difficult time, you can share your prayer request with us anonymously and securely on our website at myfaithradio.com. Thanks so much for tuning in today. This is Susie Larson and Susie Larson Live. Jamie and Donna Winship are my guests today, and we are having a fantastic conversation about moving from a scarcity mindset to our abundant mindset, a mindset of abundance. A scarcity mindset is based on our false identities, as well as a need for certainty, making an idol out of certainty that the world has to be safe and predictable. You know how we all can bend that way, and it's time to smash that idol. Perfection, that failure is not an option, of self-interest, where it's all about us. And as Jamie and Donna have said, those mindsets divide us, because instantly you start to look at people as a threat rather than as a gift from God, someone God is entrusting to you to love. So, okay, Jamie, let's start talking true identity, because we just got a few minutes left. Abundance, the mindset that there's always more than enough. Say more.
Yeah. My favorite topic, because each of us, our identities, when we're knit together in our mother's womb, and God gives us identity that's unique to us, never made before, never will be made again. And so that identity, our identity, our true identity, is our gift to the world. Mm. And so as each person is activated into understanding, it's a discovering of who you already are. It's not magic. It's not invoked by some magic prayer. It's discovering who God has made you to be and wants you to grow in becoming more deeply and more beautifully. And so that's the true identity. Donna, say your definition of true identity. I like the way you say it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, a true identity is the essence of who you really are. It's the I that you carry deep within. It's beyond time. It's timeless, and it grows and develops in community. And we see it all through Scripture. Just read about Gideon, read about Moses, read about Peter, Paul, and the name changes that you see there. And if the listeners have time, just look up Isaiah 43:1, where he says, I have called you by name, for you are mine. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
So good. Okay, so looking, false identity, scarcity. True identity is abundance. False identity, certainty. True identity, mystery. So where we are making an idol that the world has to be safe and predictable, you're operating in a scarcity mindset. The trueness of what God invites us to in our identity is that life is an opening to the unknown. Donna, any more you want to say about that?
Just briefly, because we've talked about it a little bit, but, you know, mystery, we think of mystery as something that you can't know. It's a mystery. But all of us love a mystery. Look how we binge watch, you know, Netflix shows, and we love the cliffhanger and what's going to happen next. Because we really, deep in our spirit, in our true identity, we love that mystery. And mystery doesn't mean that you can't know it. It means that there is this endless discoverability. Mm-hmm. And everything, your true identity is a mystery. It's not a one and done, oh, you sense this identity from God. But then you go on this journey of discovering the depth of it and the deeper meaning of it and the way that it gives you life. I mean, that in itself is a mystery, the joyful attachment that you feel from God. Mystery is really one of my favorite parts of this whole thing.
Well, how has God revealed your identity? How would you phrase it, or what words would you give to it?
God has called me several different identities through this journey. We got into this in the late 1990s. And if briefly I can say, you have more than one identity, and your identity grows and develops. The first identity I ever heard was beloved and beautiful daughter. And I needed to know that connection. Hmm. But then that's how I relate to God. That's how I know he relates to me. But then he also calls me timeless life giver. And that's how I relate to other people. Beautiful. So there's like this vertical and horizontal thing going on with the identities.
I can so resonate. Okay, so we've got just about 2 minutes left, Jamie. So I'm looking at the false identity is perfection, where failure is not an option. And the true identity, it's fallibility. There's a capacity for error. And then finally, self-interest, it's all about me. And on the true identity, common good, it's about the good of the community. So with just a couple minutes, kind of tie those together about bringing our imperfect selves before the Lord and for the sake of the common good. And that is God's plan.
Yeah, well, beautiful. Again, let me just refer to, Don and I were with almost 500 college students a couple of weeks ago, all packed into this place, and we were walking them over a couple of days through exactly what we're talking about here. And in the final session, I said, let's exchange now. So some of these kids were from Christian background. A lot of them weren't. So we're walking through worldview with them, and the crowd grew every session. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it grew. Every time we went back in, more people had come, because this is what people are hungry to know. We really do think the world that we live in is negative and false, and we do have a problem with it. We just don't know that there's good news. There's an alternative. And so the last session, we had explained identity, and I said, let's just all together in this room, hundreds of them in a room, all in silence. Let's invite Jesus into the room. Let's imagine Christ with us, and let's give to Jesus all the identities that the world has given us that are hurting us. And in just silence in the room, let's give them to Jesus. Watch what Jesus does, how he removes them and takes them away forever from you. And now let's ask him, what do you call me? And you can hear the people start crying because the spirit moves in the room, mm-hmm. and God and the good shepherd speaks to his sheep, mm-hmm. who he knows and loves, who don't know him. And so that, for your listeners, that's the simple process. It's like telling the Lord, here's what I believe about myself in the scarcity, not enough world. I'm not a good dad. I'm not a good parent, whatever. We give these to the Lord. We give them to Christ. We lay them down. We cast our care on him. And then when we give them away, we ask the Lord, driving in your car, wherever you are, Lord, what do you say about me? Tell me the truth about who I am. And when he speaks that truth into you, it's dramatic how it'll be other focused. It'll show you who you are as a gift to other people. And so it almost organically, you look up to God, you look into yourself, get rid of the false. This is Isaiah chapter 6. And then immediately the next question of the Lord is, okay, who do we send to the others? And we raise our hand in the true identity and say, send me. That's how it works.
I can't wait till our conversation next month, but have an amazing time with some of your kids for Thanksgiving, Jamie and Donna. Thank you for the time today.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You guys are such a treasure. And a special thanks to Jamie from my brother-in-law, Rich, who took extra time with him. It meant the world to him when we were connected very recently. And friends, thank you for tuning in. I pray you found some encouragement here today. Boy, I did. We'll meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening to Suzy Larson Live. Podcasts like mine are available because of your support. If it's important to you to hear things that encourage your faith, click the link in the show notes and give now.